Roisin did not exist before this episode. What they are about to describe is happening across Northwest as you listen. This is their story. In Bolton South and Walkden, one of the most deprived constituencies in the country, healthcare training places sit empty while nursing vacancies go unfilled and workers wait years for their chance to qualify. The resources exist, the people exist, but Treasury spending limits have severed the connection between them.
I'm Roisin, and I've wanted to be a nurse since I was 16. Not because of some dramatic moment or calling, but because I watched my mum come home from her night shifts at Royal Bolton Hospital, talking about how they were short-staffed again, how patients were waiting longer because there weren't enough qualified nurses on the ward. She'd trained as a healthcare assistant when I was little, working her way up from cleaning to patient care, and I could see how much she cared about getting it right. I wanted to do more than she could do. I wanted to train properly, get my degree, become the nurse the ward needed. I left college in 2018 and started working as a care assistant at Birchwood Nursing Home while I saved money and planned my application. The plan was simple. Apply through UCAS, get accepted somewhere local like University of Bolton or University of Salford, do my 3 years and come back to work where I grew up. People needed nurses here. I could see that every day. In 2019, I sent my applications off and waited. University of Bolton got back to me first, not with an offer, but with an apology. They'd had to cut their nursing intake by 30% due to what they called reduced funding from Health Education England. They suggested I try again next year when things might be different. University of Salford said almost exactly the same thing. Budget constraints, reduced places, try again next cycle. So I did. 2020, same universities, same response. Sorry, we've had to reduce places due to budget constraints from HM Treasury spending limits. The exact phrase stuck with me because it sounded so official, so final, like they were reading from the same script. I tried again in 2021. The responses were getting shorter. Just a standard rejection citing current funding constraints in nurse education. By 2022, I wasn't even getting personal responses. Just automated emails about limited places due to ongoing budget pressures. In 2023, I decided to go straight to the source. I rang Health Education England Northwest and asked to speak to someone about nursing training places. The woman I spoke to was actually quite helpful. She listened to my whole story, said she understood the demand, but then told me, "We simply cannot afford to fund more places. Our training budget has been capped." There's something about the way she said it that made me accept it completely. Not just accept it, but feel almost grateful that she'd explained it so clearly. Of course, they couldn't afford it. Budgets have limits. Money doesn't grow on trees. It sounded reasonable. I kept working at Birchwood, watching agency staff come and go every few weeks. Some of them were agency nurses earning twice what the permanent staff made, working one shift and then disappearing. The manager would complain about the cost, but what choice did she have? The permanent nursing posts stayed vacant because there weren't enough qualified people applying. My mum's ward was the same story. 12 nursing vacancies, she told me. They'd been advertising for months. A few applications, mostly from people wanting to move from other trusts, creating vacancies somewhere else. It was like moving pieces around on a board instead of actually training new nurses. Then in February 2024, I picked up an extra shift covering for the cleaner at the University of Bolton's nursing training facility. She was off sick, they needed someone who was CRB checked, and Birchwood let me do it as a favour to the university. That's when I saw the empty wards. Not real hospital wards. Training wards, simulation bays they called them, fully equipped with hospital beds, monitoring machines, drug trolleys, even these incredibly expensive computerized mannequins that could simulate different medical conditions. I counted 24 bays in total, each one set up like a perfect teaching environment. But only 8 were being used. I asked the facilities manager why the rest were empty. He looked embarrassed. "We used to run 3 cohorts a year," he said. "Now we only run 1 because of the funding. So all this equipment just sits here most of the time. 24 fully equipped training bays, sitting empty 8 months of the year. I stood there with my mop and bucket, looking at all these perfect teaching spaces, thinking about the conversation I'd had with Health Education England. We simply cannot afford to fund more places. But the places were right there. The equipment was right there. The university had lecturers who knew how to teach nursing. I knew at least 6 people from Little Lever who wanted to train as nurses but couldn't get accepted. If the people existed, and the equipment existed, and the teachers existed, what exactly was it that there was no money for? That's when I started thinking differently about what I'd been told. The government that prints the pound notes and mints the coins had told me, through all these different institutions, that it couldn't find enough pounds to connect the people who wanted to train with the places that were sitting empty. But I was looking at those places with my own eyes. They weren't theoretical. They were real beds with real equipment, maintained and ready to use. The money wasn't the thing that was missing. The decision to spend the money was what was missing. I used to accept the excuse that there was no money. I hear it differently now. The government that issues the currency told me it couldn't find enough of its own currency to train people who were standing right there, ready to learn, in facilities that were standing right there, ready to teach them. The real question was never about money. It was about whether the people existed. They did. Whether the skills could be taught. They could. Whether the equipment was available. It was. The excuse wasn't a fact. It was a choice wrapped in the language of impossibility. It's the same logic as a household saying, we can't afford it, except a household doesn't issue its own currency. The government does. The limit was never the money. The limit was the willingness to spend it on the people and places that needed it. I'm still working at Birchwood. I'm still applying for nursing places, though I know what the response will be. But I understand now that what happened to me isn't just bad luck or unfortunate timing. It's the same pattern playing out in every constituency where people and needs exist side by side while someone in Westminster insists the cupboard is bare. The cupboard isn't bare. The decision to keep it locked is what's stopping us.
What Roisin experienced has a name: fake experts. Fake experts work by citing authority figures who present contested ideas as settled facts. Think of tobacco companies in the 1960s citing medical experts who claimed smoking was harmless, when the medical profession was actually divided and the evidence was mounting against the tobacco use. In Roisin's case, every institution cited the same financial constraint as though it were a law of nature rather than a policy choice. Economists say we cannot spend more on health without causing inflation. But which economists? The profession is divided. Many macroeconomists argue the binding constraint is real capacity, not currency. Economists say, without naming them, is an appeal to unnamed authority. The fake expertise lies in treating the household budget analogy as economic gospel. When Health Education England told Roisin we simply cannot afford to fund more places, they presented this as objective financial reality rather than what it actually was: a political decision to limit government spending based on the false belief that a currency issuer must ration its own currency like a household rations its income. The UK government issues its own currency. It does not need to find pounds before it spends them. The real constraint is resources, people, skills, materials, time. And in Roisin's constituency, those resources were sitting idle. The resources existed, the people existed, the decision not to connect them was political, not financial. Bolton South and Walkden ranked 17 out of 543 English constituencies on deprivation measures, placing it in the most deprived 10% nationally. English Indices of Deprivation 2025, MHCLG. The constituency has 1,356 registered charities, Charity Commission Register, England and Wales. Total grants received amount to £23.6 million, 360 Giving Grant Navi. All sources are published at blockedbritain.co.uk. Blocked Britain tells the stories of people whose lives are shaped by the gap between what Britain needs and what its institutions choose to provide. Every character is fictional. Every situation is drawn from official statistics. Produced by Blocked Britain.